Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Folks, this past weekend, another horrific reminder of the dangerous rise of global anti-Semitism that went on in Australia, Sydney's Bondi Beach. And here to talk to us about that is Arnie Filko, former CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater New Orleans. Arnie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Newell. Thanks for having me.
Arnie, I mean, these instances are beginning to become more frequent. They seem to be piling one on the other in countries that typically we've not seen this type of activity either. Your thoughts?
Well, it's absolutely terrible. I mean, even our Pope, commented over the weekend that anti-Semitism has just got to stop, too much. And we're seeing it in America. We're seeing it, in this case, in Australia, other parts of the world right now. And, you know, unfortunately, anti-Semitism is not new. It's been around for many centuries. And candidly, it's a downfall of a lot of civilizations. It's the beginning of, you know, the end. And we've just got to stop the rhetoric, stop the talk, stop the hate. Because it's literally killing people. And I can say the Jewish community is concerned. We have a lot of events this week because of Hanukkah, and, you know, obviously, and even in New Orleans, there's heavy security at those events. But, you know, the appeal has got to be to all people, stop the hate, stop the rhetoric, because words matter and words get translated into violence and what we saw over the weekend at Bondi Beach in Australia.
You know, it's amazing to me when, you know, there's groups of people that collect throughout this country and throughout the world and cities that will chant, globalize the Intifada. And it's like our leaders are completely desensitized to what that actually means. And when you have a mob that says it, what do you think is going to happen?
I mean,
it's stating the obvious of what their intentions are, right?
Absolutely. I mean, look, one could have different views on, you know, decisions of government and politics and such. But what we're seeing right now on both sides of the political spectrum, I mean, you got on the left side, you've got the globalized Intifada. You've got the mayor-elect of New York. That was one of his slogans. And on the right, what's happened over the last couple of days is truly scary. I mean, I don't know how much your listeners know this. You had a conference in New York over the weekend from the Young Republicans of New York, where they literally brought Holocaust deniers, and they brought a party from Germany who is far right, who believes that the Holocaust needs to kind of be forgotten. I mean, you kind of wonder what is happening here on both sides. And, you know, and again, people got to understand that words really do matter. When people hear these things, you know, it translates into terrible things. And in the United States alone, I mean, we just uncovered a New Year's Eve terrorist attack in California that had Louisiana ties to it, by the way, from a pro-Palestinian group. You have, you know, what happened in Boulder, Colorado a few months ago, you know, what happened in Sydney. I mean, it's sickening. And we've got to stop it, and we've got to realize we must come together. And when there is hate, whether it's on, no matter where it's directed, we've got to combat it, we've got to speak against it, and unify. That is the best way we're going to get rid of anti-Semitism.
It seems as though Mr. Albanese's government in Australia has kind of turned a blind eye to a whole series of attacks that go back to the summer. I didn't realize that Bondi Beach happens to be an area of Australia that actually has a lot of Jewish folks that migrated there and live in that area. But, you know, it seems as though they just didn't take a lot of what they had from an intelligence standpoint and what they were seeing out on the streets very seriously.
No, that's very true. I mean, it has been, you know, known in the Jewish community globally, but maybe less so in the community at large. Australia has really raised some real concerns over the last year. And there have been, you know, people that have said, you know, this could potentially lead to violence against the Jewish community. And it did. I mean, Australia is a very interesting Jewish community because it's the largest post-Holocaust community where people that survived the Holocaust moved to. So it has a very vibrant Jewish community there. And, you know, like everywhere else in the world right now, people are very scared. You know, and some of this relates obviously to what's happened in the Middle East. You know, Australia has taken a very pro-Palestinian perspective. And again, people can have different views on Gaza, and nobody wants the suffering we've seen, you know, for anybody in that region. But the reality is, when you have groups that are calling for, you know, from the river to the sea, or globalize the intifada, I mean, those kind of statements lead people, you know, to terrible acts. And, you know, in this case in Australia, you had a father and a son who had pledged apparently their you know, their commitment to ISIS. They had just got back from a trip to the Philippines, which I'm sure is being investigated right now. But, you know, it's just a terrible situation. How do you go on a holiday, you know, go to a beach with long guns and with the purpose of just killing innocent people? And, you know, I do have to say this, if there's any form of hope and silver lining in anything, this wonderful fruit vendor, who is a Muslim man who took it upon himself to take away the gun of the father, and himself got shot. That is an incredible story, a courageous story in the midst of just a horrific scene.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is the prime minister's reaction was immediately talking about more gun control. Australia has some of the most serious gun control laws in the world. Why is it there's this strong reluctance to address this Islamic State ideology? It's almost as though people fumble through this and they can't figure it out. They're afraid to consume some political capital because in a lot of these countries, there's a very strong Muslim representation.
Yeah, absolutely true. You know, we as a world have got to understand that there's radicalism out there. And in this case, and we've been dealing with this for two decades now, and, you know, in America with 9/11, you know, radical Islam is a terrible, terrible evil for the world. And, you know, whether it be with Hamas of what they did on October 7, I mean, 1,200 people absolutely murdered in the most vicious way, or what you saw in Australia, or what you see in America, you know, it's incumbent upon all of us, members of the Islamic community, the Jewish community, Christian community, to come together and just reject this ideology. It's against the West. It's against Israel. It's against the Jewish world. And if we don't stop it, we're going to continue to have these type of situations. And, you know, elected officials have got to have the courage and put the politics aside and say, no, it's not happening. I mean, Newell, this is how sickening this is. I mean, because it goes left and right. I mean, do you realize over the weekend, Tucker Carlson's brother basically came out and said this was a complete hoax. There was nothing that happened in Australia. This was fabricated. I mean, what kind of nonsense is this? And where is some of the commentary from the right and the left media to say we're not going to accept this kind of stuff? And so I just have to say this. I mean, look, the Jewish community has faced anti-Semitism for centuries, whether it be from Spain to Germany to now. It's always going to be there. But when you have successful civilizations and countries, they wrap their arms around each other and they reject it and they fight it. And that's exactly what we've got to start to do right now.
Let's pivot to the Middle East real quick. There are a lot of frustration, right? We have the Trump plan that's been partially executed on. It seems as though it has reached a point where it's not moving really quick in the direction of maturation there. And Israel has been compelled to continue to take out some of the leaders of Hamas that are still trying to reconstitute themselves. Where do you see this playing out here? And it's kind of moved off the front pages, right? It's almost out of sight, out of mind right now.
Yeah, it has. You know, Israel took out a Hamas leader over the weekend that was involved in the October 7 attack. And, you know, and I saw that our own government kind of condemned Israel for that, which I think is ridiculous. I mean, look, the reality is we're all happy that, with the exception, I think, of one dead hostage body who has not been returned. The rest of the hostages, both living and dead, have returned. That's been the benefit of the deal that was reached. But we're now basically at phase two, and I don't think we're going to get to a successful phase two until Hamas is gone. I mean, you cannot allow Hamas to still have a presence in Gaza and have some kind of peace plan and a board of peace and other countries wanting to come in. They're not going to do that. I don't see any other countries in the world wanting to come into Gaza with their own forces right now until Hamas is gone and there could be a true representative government of some kind there. So I think the next couple of weeks are very important here. The reality is Hamas doesn't seem to want to go away, and it's probably going to take more military action in order to force that issue, largely by the Israelis. And, you know, I feel bad because the Gazan people have had a lot of suffering at, you know, because of Hamas, and there may be more coming in the future here. But if we want any peace to take hold there, Hamas has got to be eradicated. And, you know, and Israel is also facing that now on its northern border because you're starting to see Hezbollah in Lebanon, you know, kind of resurface with the support of Iran. So, you know, I feel like we're coming, you know, we're almost returning to the past a little bit, and we got to figure this thing out.
Yeah, I think the optimism is waning. My question, there were a number of Gazan or Palestinian sects that were pushing back against Hamas and were seeing some success in doing so. We're not seeing a lot of reporting about that. Do you have any information relative to that?
No, Gaza is very interesting because you have Hamas, obviously, has been the government now for decades, but you have these clans, and these clans, many of them were anti-Hamas, and they were pushing back. Unfortunately, in the days leading up to that ceasefire, if you remember, I mean, Hamas literally rounded up people, put them in a circle, and executed them. And I think it put kind of a deterrent and chilling effect on more people coming out. So you have not heard much about that. The only thing that I think everybody acknowledges is Hamas is still there. They're in the tunnels. And if there is any chance for peace, and look, everybody wants peace. You know, I know people are down on a two-state solution right now, but the reality is, you know, I think every person wants peace to be found, if possible. But you're only going to get that when you have a true Palestinian government that has that same feeling and a true Israeli government that wants that. And right now, I don't think any of that could be done while Hamas still has a presence, you know, in the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, I read an article the other day that the school-age children in some of the schools there are still teaching and talking about from the river to the sea, and still talking about and encouraging death to the Jews. And I just don't know how. I mean, how do we get around the corner if this is still the case, right?
Well, we got to start with the younger generation, and it has to start with a new generation of leadership on all sides, Israeli and Palestinian, that stop teaching this hate. You know, the UNRWA, the UN agency that's involved, you know, has had major flaws to it, which is why we've defunded it many times, because they seem to, their agenda seems to be to just continue the hostility and the hate. That's got to stop. I mean, I have friends, obviously, in Israel, I have friends from the Palestinian community in the Middle East. And, you know, I can tell you that for the most part, families want the same things. We want peace.
Yeah.
And we want our children to succeed. And we've just got to put this level of hatred down and defeat it. And again, it goes back to anti-Semitism. I've traveled to Germany quite a bit. And I have to tell you, what's happening in Germany is very scary, because it's been the most pro-Jewish, pro-Israel community since the Holocaust. There's now a political party in Israel, in Germany, that literally is the second leading party there, that is Holocaust denial, that is, we got to forget the history, it should scare the heck out of us. And I think, you know, Americans need to follow these kind of things, you know, because those things that may be in Europe now will eventually end up in America. And if I could, Noel, just before I know we're going to get to a break here, I just want to mention, I know you've got an expert on in Ukraine. The Ukrainian situation is really bad right now. Literally Russia every night is bombing cities all over Ukraine, cities that I've visited many times now in the last 4 years that were once thought upon as safe. They're not safe anymore. And Americans got to wake up, and our president's got to wake up. He's got to understand you cannot force a bad deal on Ukraine, because we'll pay for it in the future. I mean, we want peace. Yes, there's maybe a deal that could be made there, but it's got to be a fair deal.
No, I couldn't agree more. I've said from the very beginning, they're talking about Section 5 like, you know, protections. Well, we had an agreement that outlined that before, and we didn't do anything. We reneged.
That is true.
How anybody believes that this is the path that we ought to take this time, and that we're going to be any more credible, it's like beyond me. You know, what's the old adage? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, or something along those lines. I always screw them up. But
Exactly. Well, we got to realize Russia and Putin are war criminals, and that the best way to deal with them is to take action against them. And that's how we're going to get to a peace in Ukraine, is when we're strong, not when we, you know, when we concede to a power that really is a bad government and a terrible, terrible human being.
Yeah, no doubt about it. As always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. Thank you so much for joining us. Arnie Filko, former CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater New Orleans. Have an incredible holiday season.
Thanks. Same to you and all your listeners. Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Folks, stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Folks, not unlike what's going on in the Middle East, you're not reading a whole lot about what's happening between Ukraine and Russia. It seems to have moved off of the front pages, and I thought it was time to sit down again with Colonel Jeff McCausland, who we've talked to probably a dozen or so times about what is happening in Ukraine, and he joins us now. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Newell, always a pleasure.
Colonel, this was headed down a path. It seemed to have some momentum. Things were happening. It's been a start, stop. But the Russians seem to be bombing every city in Ukraine now. What do you see happening, and where are we?
Well, certainly on the battlefield, your description is not inaccurate. The Russians have been intensifying their attacks, particularly on the energy grid across Ukraine. Ukraine is now perhaps receiving 6 hours, maybe even less, of electricity on every given day, using both drones as well as missiles. And some evenings there are 400 or 500 drones and maybe 40 to 50 missiles that are employed. At the same time, though, it's important to point out the Ukrainians have been able to respond. They have now developed their own ballistic missile, a short-range ballistic missile, and they've hit about 50 or so military industrial targets or refineries all across Russia, putting a crimp in Russian fuel supplies, and actually there are some reports of rationing in Moscow. Physically on the battlefield has kind of, if you will, stagnated. I mean, I was looking at some numbers to toss some things at you, Newell, and if you look at the beginning of this year, January 25 to November of 2025, the Russians have gained about 2,000 square miles. Well, that may sound like a great deal, but that's less than 1% of the entire territory of Ukraine, and it's about the size of Rhode Island. And for that 1% of territory, they've had 395,000 casualties in this 1 year alone, which some people suggest are more casualties than they suffered certainly in the war, 10 years of war that they had in Afghanistan, and they may have actually suffered more casualties around one town of Pokrovsk than they suffered in that war, and they still have not taken that particular town. Now, to be fair, all's not right with the Ukrainians. We've had this massive fraud case, which resulted in the chief of staff, Mr. Zelensky, resigning. Millions of dollars involved in that fraud case. Ukrainians as well are having trouble with their own casualties and some increased desertion. So that's kind of the situation on the battlefield for both sides. Last but not least, it's interesting, overnight, also the Ukrainians just employed for the first time a underwater drone, basically a big torpedo with a guidance system, and struck a Kilo-class Russian submarine that was in the Black Sea. Severe damage to that particular vessel. First time the Ukrainians have done something like that.
Yeah, they've been very innovative with not a lot of assets, right? I mean, in many respects. Again, though, would you agree that the kind of the reporting on this has just been waning?
Well, it's been waning, I think, on American media, not so much on European media, and I think for a couple of reasons. One is the Russians, I think, have been very successful. You know, war is fought on several levels, and it's a contest of willpower. So we certainly talk about the battlefield. We talk about airspace. We talk about naval engagements, like that submarine engagement. But there's also battles in the information space, and the Russians have been very successful, I would argue, in controlling the narrative. And they've been pushing the narrative that, hey, we're winning, and our success is inevitable. There's no chance for the Ukrainians to be successful. And that seems to have persuaded a lot of people, frankly, here in the United States, that this is kind of hopeless, and we should cut a deal, whatever that deal might be, to end this particular contest. And I think that's really not accurate if you look at some of the things that I just talked about. And that's translated over, obviously, in the last week or so to expand the negotiations led by the United States in many ways. Mr. Witkoff and Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, going to Moscow to speak with Putin. And then a very important series of negotiations with European leaders and Mr. Zelensky that just concluded in the last couple of days in Berlin, claiming that they have an 80% agreement on a proposal for ending this particular conflict. That being said, my experience, when you're at 80%, you're just getting to the hard topics. But at the same time, I think it's also problematical, frankly, not to be a pessimist, that Mr. Putin may not agree to any kind of a peace plan simply because he thinks his willpower is stronger and that if he persists, he'll be successful.
I was reading an article the other day that French and German citizens, their support for the war, financial support, that is kind of waning. Obviously, they're facing tough economic times there, and leadership there is paying close attention to what they're saying, but they seem to be holding firm on being squarely with the Ukrainians and not really willing to give up any territory to Russia. Has that changed any at all?
It hasn't changed, but you put your finger on a crucial problem, and that is European willingness to support the Ukrainians. Because if you look at the numbers in terms of military aid to Ukraine, obviously the American contribution largely disappeared in quarter one, though it was interesting to me, in the most recent National Defense Authorization Act, the Congress put about $400 million into Ukrainian mil aid for both 2026 and 2027, but still the vast majority is coming from the Europeans. This particular week will be an important one because not only did we have these Berlin meetings with the Europeans, Zelensky, the United States reps, but on the 18th of December, the European Union will meet. And this particular discussion is one that's been going on for quite some time, and that is whether or not the Europeans can come together to basically leverage about $240 billion in Russian assets that are frozen in European banks and use that as collateral to provide Ukraine about $100 billion in loans. Some of that will be for mil aid, some of that will be just for economic support. And I think not only is that important from the standpoint of the monetary, you know, amount we're talking about, but as a demonstration of political unity on the part of the Europeans to pick up the slack if, in fact, the United States is basically going to walk away. And again, looking at a document that came out in the last week or so, the president's new national security strategy, that kind of looks like what Mr. Trump is planning on doing. I mean, in many ways, he has talked about that his goal in that particular strategy is to reestablish strategic stability with the Russians. The document kind of dismisses the Russians as any kind of real threat to the United States. With that in mind, you might say, well, from Mr. Trump's perspective, the war in Ukraine is an obstacle between where he is and where he wants to be in terms of the relations with the Russians. We'll need to get that off the table. That's a priority. For a European, you say, you don't understand, compromising Ukrainian security actually compromises our security as well, because we think the Russians will be a larger regional threat for many years to come.
Yeah, no doubt. And it seems as though we are now waiving this Article 5
yes.
protection provision out there as a carrot. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but the Ukraine's fell prey to that promise once. Do we really believe they're going to do it again?
That is the crucial question.
Would you?
I mean, that's the crucial question. And the last 20% of those negotiations I said we were trying to accomplish with the Ukrainians and eventually with the Russians will be really over two issues, territory and security guarantees. Territory, where do we make concessions? And the Ukrainians have said, okay, we're willing to sign up to have a ceasefire where we are right now. The land that the Russians control physically, they've taken. We'll acknowledge that de facto, but probably not willing to acknowledge that, what they call in diplomatic terms, de jure, that actually is Russian territory, okay?
Right.
What the Russians wanted to do is actually withdraw from about 20% of this Donbass region that the Ukraine still controls. The Ukraine said, no, we can't do that without a referendum by our people. And furthermore, if we do that, we're going to compromise our defenses because that's our fortress belt, and offer the Russians an opportunity in future then to move in and take the rest of the country if they want. The security guarantees, you're right, are also a problem. The Ukrainians have asked for security guarantees. They had a security guarantee from the United States called the Budapest Memorandum back in the 90s, which proved pretty toothless when the Russians invaded in 2014. So they don't want to go through that again. So they want, if you will, NATO-like security guarantees, while at the same time compromising and acknowledging that NATO membership is not going to happen anytime soon. That's a pretty hard square to circle, you know, if you know what I mean. What might that include? Some have suggested it would be a European-led peacekeeping force on the ground in Ukraine, perhaps a no-fly zone over Ukraine. The United States might contribute to that, at least in terms of reconnaissance and intelligence and verification of compliance with any agreement. But Mr. Trump and the White House has said this particular offer for a security guarantee is temporary. I think, again, they want the Ukrainians to make maximum concessions on, which the Ukrainians aren't willing to make. But once again, right now, for the last couple of weeks, we've basically been negotiating with ourselves.
That was going to be my next question. That's what it seems like to me. I mean, it's almost like we're trying to convince ourselves that this is the path we want to go down.
Right, and even Mario Rubio has said, you know, hey, the most difficult part of this negotiation is going to be with Putin. And ultimately, you would think a war demands direct negotiations between the two antagonists, direct negotiations between Putin and Zelensky, particularly over territory. But Putin has said, what? I'm not going to negotiate with him. He's an illegitimate leader. He needs to have elections, but I would not agree to any kind of ceasefire so an election could occur. Well, how the heck do you do an election when 400 drones and 100 missiles are hitting your territory every day and 3 to 7 million of your population are dislocated? How do you do an election in that particular environment? In fact, the Russians have even refused in the last day or so to agree to a Christmas ceasefire. And then, second of all, the Russians have been insistent on this territory, insistent that Ukrainian membership in NATO is enshrined in the Ukrainian Constitution, has insisted that all military aid to Ukraine is ended, and Ukrainian military is limited to about 10% of what it is today. And they've been pretty solid in their insistence on those points ever since this war began. Even beyond that, Foreign Minister Lavrov in the last week or so even said, well, what really needs to occur in an agreement is that NATO needs to withdraw those members that entered NATO after 1997. Well, what would that mean? Well, that would mean the Baltic Republic states, Poland, mm-hmm. Hungary, Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Norway, or I'm sorry, Sweden, Finland, would all be removed from NATO. I find it pretty difficult to believe the United States would agree to that, nor do I think Ukraine would agree to those other concessions. And last but not least, how many concessions have the Russians made since this war began. I can't think of any that have occurred, frankly, Newell, but we've made a lot.
I mean, as a neophyte, I look at this and it's like, how much forecasting do I need to see to understand what exactly the Russians want and what they're trying to accomplish? I mean, I just, you know,
yeah.
I'm convinced that this is going nowhere with them.
Well, I mean, I slightly disagree with you. This is going somewhere. In the fact that the Russians think, well, Putin, let's talk about it really all about Putin thinks that he will only be successful. He can wear down, not so much the Ukrainians, but wear down the West. The United States will opt out. The Europeans will be unable to meet this decision to provide this additional aid to Ukraine and leverage those frozen Russian assets. And eventually that'll force the Ukrainians to capitulate and I'll get everything I want. He doesn't apparently have a great deal of opposition in Russia. He's pretty well controlling that one. And it's definitely, been damaging to his economy, but he's willing to make those sacrifices if, in fact, he can get exactly what he wants. So until we get to a point where he really believes, you know, I'm not going to gain what I want, and therefore it's time to compromise, I see him trying to string this along because ultimately his goal is even beyond Ukraine. That's where I disagree with you, Neil. His goal is really to fracture NATO. That's been the goal of every Soviet and Russian leader since NATO was created. And so if this war in Ukraine can ultimately be the fissure that divides Washington from Europe, well, that's a great success. And if you look at the most recent NSS and some of the comments made by Mr. Trump and his administration over the last year about supporting Europe, recent comments in which he called, you know, the Europeans weak and a decaying civilization, that's what he said about our allies. Well, then, if you're a Russian, why would you want to compromise?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Yeah, you know, it. What's it going to take? I mean, in my view, it's collectively all of us, everyone that's in NATO, to decide these are the armaments that we're going to send to Ukraine, and we're going to make a 6 to 9 month commitment that we're going to send all of this over there. Let's make this big push. Let's double down. Let's see what his reaction's going to be. Because all he's been doing is needling the Baltic states and all of those that have coterminous boundaries with with Russia, you know, to see whether or not they're, what kind of reactions that they're going to be. And at some point in time, I don't know, it may sound silly, as I said, I'm a neophyte, but let's give them the reaction.
I mean, if you look at it materially, the GDP of the European Union, if you toss in the Canadians, is not terribly smaller than that of the United States. So you would say, oh, they got the economic means to provide this particular type of assistance. The GDP of the Russian Federation, about the size of Italy. So the material assets, you could say, are there. Can you build the political willpower amongst those countries to do that? That remains the critical question. And many, if not all of them, are suffering from slow growth. They're suffering from higher demands for social services. They're suffering from aging population. So this galvanization of political will, war is a contest of wills, is the question. And that's why I pointed out to this particular event on the 18th of December in terms of divining whether or not they've got that will. But until Mr. Putin becomes convinced that there's that kind of will, that I've actually hit a wall here, I don't see him negotiating in good faith. He'll negotiate because, you know, as I used to negotiate with the Russians, and I had a Russian say to me, you know, negotiation is war by another means because we're controlling the information space. We're trying to show that we're actually very forthcoming when we're really not, and that's what they will continue to do. And trying to, which is incredible to me after these many years, basically describe Ukraine not as a victim, but it's really Ukraine's fault that we invaded. Well, that sounds crazy to say, but that basically is the argument. If Ukraine hadn't pursued membership in NATO, we would not have felt the need to invade. So therefore, the fault really lies in Kyiv for this war, not us who crossed the border and started killing Ukrainians.
But Colonel, let me ask you this. How do the Europeans come together when, you know, when they're looking at the U.S., and in my view, Trump has been like mercury, right? Every time you put your finger on it, it's sliding left, right. You know, you don't know where it's going to slide. And that just continues to be this very disruptive force of evading the ultimate question about what can collectively and collaboratively NATO can do. Would I be wrong in that
view? No, I don't think you're wrong there at all. And I do believe you have to give Mr. Trump some credit. Let's face it, ever since I can remember, American presidents have complained that the Europeans were not, you know, sharing their part of the load in terms of defense, of even during the Cold War. And it took Mr. Trump and that sort of effort on his part to be disruptive to shake him into reality along with the invasion of Ukraine. And so now they have said, well, we'll devote up to 5% of our GDP on defense. By the way, that's a higher percentage than the United States spends on our GDP on defense. We're at about 3.5%. Now, whether they can fulfill that obligation, back to those limitations I mentioned a little while ago, that remains to be seen, if they can, in fact, actually do that. And can they convince their populations of that? And that still remains the problem. But you're right again, and Mr. Trump has been back and forth. We had this explosion with Zelensky in the Oval Office back in February. And then we had sort of a meeting in Rome at the funeral of the Pope, in which things seem to be coming back together again. So, you know, every day is a new day. You know, Mr. Trump suddenly proposed this 28-point plan out of the blue, which is very favorable to the Russians. This causes the Europeans to react very quickly and say, wait a minute, you don't understand. That compromises our security as well. And so there's a lot of that flip-flop that has caused the Europeans, I think, to be very concerned. Can they depend on the United States in future? Is that American security guarantee for anything worthwhile? And we've seen announcements by all the Europeans, not only about increasing defense spending, but that they have to be more independent. One of the byproducts of that could be that we, frankly, could see a quick growth over the next couple of years of nuclear proliferation and a lot more states acquiring nuclear weapons. Because if you're a German, if you're Swedish, if you're Finnish, you certainly have the industrial capacity to create a nuclear weapon. And if nobody else is going to defend us, then I need something to deter, you know, a threat in the future. Same might be with Taiwan. If you're Taiwan, you're South Korea. 70% of the people in South Korea don't understand why the South Korean government doesn't acquire a nuclear weapon, threatened by the North. So again, if the U.S. is retrenching, which the national security document seems to suggest, beyond the actions we see in Ukraine, why wouldn't those countries pursue self-help to make sure they can deter aggression, whether that aggression is Russian or Chinese?
I say this about a lot of things when I worked in government. If you don't control it, it ain't going to happen. And it seems as though a lot of these countries are coming to that belief system as well. If they don't control it, it's just not going to happen. You know? And they have an obligation to protect their respective citizenry. As always, thoroughly enjoy the conversation. Colonel Jeff McCausland, thank you, CBS military analyst. Thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great holiday season.
Same to you, Newell. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, sir. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second, and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.